In this text, we finally hear a new voice. The first 39 chapters of Isaiah are grim condemnations of a society that had lost its way. It is Isaiah's grappling with the utter destruction of Jerusalem at the hands of the invading Babylonian Empire. Isaiah does not actually describe the destruction, but it's described in detail elsewhere in Scripture, in 2 Kings 24 and 25, and in the book of Lamentations. And it's graphic, it's horrible. The voice we hear today from what is often called Deutero-Isaiah or 2 Isaiah opens with this passage, a response to the devastation. Lamentations is largely unread in the life of the church because it's, frankly, it's too harsh. The piety of the people who put together the list of readings for the church just left it out. Something maybe to be studied in a classroom, but not read in church. It depicts trauma, abandonment, violence. The church, and frankly, often we, hide from such honest depictions of how hard things can actually get for us. The very language of Lamentations, however, is what allows Isaiah 40, this beautiful text we just heard Sarah read, to answer. So let me read just two brief verses from Lamentation that set up in very specific ways the language that Isaiah uses, Deutero-Isaiah or 2 Isaiah uses in this first beginning of a response after the destruction of Jerusalem. Lamentations 1, verse 16. This is why I weep and my eyes overflow with tears. No one is near to comfort me. No one to restore my spirit. My children are destitute because the enemy has prevailed. In Lamentations 3, starting with verse 7, God has walled me in so I cannot escape. They have weighed me down with chains. Even when I call out or cry for help, they shut out my prayer. They have barred my way with blocks of stone. They have made my paths crooked. No one is near to comfort me. God has made my paths crooked. What this, you know, as I reflected on this passage, I thought to myself, what this language gets right is that we do feel just such feelings. On the one hand, it's patterns of social injustice, dehumanization, violence, things that are experienced on the everyday by women, by Indigenous persons, by African Americans, by queer people. Intersectional oppression is real and persistent, and it evokes language like this. But sometimes also it's psychological suffering. Deep personal suffering, self-doubt, even self-inflicted harm, rooted in mental illness that strikes hard in people's lives. Such mental distress causes people to experience just what Lamentation describes. There is no one near to comfort me. God has made my paths crooked. But then I also think what this language gets wrong, although I understand it, and people still use this kind of language today, is placing the causation for suffering in the hands of God. In some respects, I read Deutero-Isaiah, this passage from Isaiah 40, as undercutting this language, seemingly saying that God screwed up and the people were like accidentally punished double for their sins. Isaiah depicts God as allowing Jerusalem to be punished for her sin, but the punishment was so horrible that she actually paid double. It's almost as if Deuteronomy Isaiah feels bound to keep with this frame of God's punishment, but works hard as they can, to flip the perspective toward the opposite view of God, not as absent, not as vindictive or violent or punishing, but God as present and tender and loving and forgiving. The end of the passage says it all, I think, and suggests why this text became so associated with Jesus, with the season of Advent, with Handel's Messiah, of course. Because Jesus, as we meet him in the Gospels, is the good shepherd of the sheep. And this passage from Isaiah 40 ends, God will feed their flock like a shepherd. They will gather the lambs in their arms and carry them in their bosom and gently lead the sheep. I remember when I was a child. It was about 4 a.m., and my dad shook me awake, and I looked up at him, confused, groggy, and he said to me, "Come, the lamb's been born." So I threw on my clothes and my coat and my boots and hat, and I went out with him to the barn. Well, we didn't exactly have a barn. We had a garage with this little lean-to on the end of it for our two horses and our one sheep and our one cow. We had, like, you know, what my dad wanted to be a farm, but it was hardly. But nonetheless, there in this little shed barn on the end of our garage was my 4-H sheep, my black sheep, licking her little lamb and nudging the lamb, trying to get it up on its wobbly legs. And I was totally overcome by excitement, and I just scooped it up and I said, "Hello, beautiful lamb." You know, the excitement of children. But then I, you know, came to my senses and set it down and let her mom continue the ritual newborn licking and gently prodding her newborn, and I sat staring, amazed. Now, one of my cardinal rules for preaching is that the preacher cannot be the example of how to be like Jesus, or the example of, like, what God is like. God is like me. And you might be right to worry that I'm going to say, God is like me as a child, embracing the lamb. But that's not right. I took the lamb from its mother for my own joy. And the real image of God in the story, one I think that Isaiah gets implicitly, is that God is like that mother sheep, licking her newborn, nudging her nose into its unstable body as it tries to walk. This is a different image than the image of the shepherd, I admit that. Yet it feels like the heart of this text. Comfort, comfort my people. Speak tenderly, says your God. Here is your God, a mother sheep, nuzzling you, urging you to find your feet, to be in this world you now find yourself in, without knowing the way. And the way, it turns out, is not a direction, not a destination, but an orientation of tender, loving presence, one for another, so that we do not feel as if God has gone far from us, and the way to comfort is crooked and long. We share the sermon at St. Lydia's, and we'll spend a few moments in silent reflection. Then, when you hear the bell sound, you're invited to share stories or experiences that were sparked by the scripture text or by my brief reflections. Two invitations for how we hold the space. We don't share opinions or engage in crosstalk, either praising or critiquing what others have said, but simply share stories as Jesus did. If you often share, perhaps hold back so that others may share. And if you rarely share, you're welcome to step in and share your experiences, because it's through sharing our stories that we come to know each other more deeply. We begin in silence.